And welcome back to Niggas with Niggas. It's me, Boy Life.
It's me, Joe.
And the long awaited return to cinema has come with Dune Part 2.
The next installment of, I guess, the Dune trilogy, right? Is it going to be confirmed as
Dune
trilogy, right?
Denis Villeneuve, no relation to it. He has said he's going to make a third movie based on Children of Dune. But that won't come out till when it's got good and goddamn ready. That's what he said. So, yeah, no, the second film in the third trilogy.
Yeah, and I mean, like you alluded to a little bit there, you know, the first Dune was released, I believe, what, in 2021? I believe?
Yes, it was 2021.
And it was still, it was a, when HBO Max, when that was still a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Max now, but, you know. And HBO Max was doing a both release in movie theaters, in limited movie theaters, and also on home streaming.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's how we watched the first Dune movie, streaming at home.
Yeah.
However, I remember when we did that review, to be like, hey, if you have the shot to do it, to you know, to watch it in the theaters, definitely do, because it's probably a way better experience. And now that we've gotten Dune 2 and we got to actually go to a movie theater to watch it, yeah.
No, that
wasn't IMAX, but I mean, it's still very.
Oh, no, yeah, no, but we got the sound effects, though.
Yeah, you know, it's just. It was a very, you know.
No, yeah.
Cinematic feel, you know?
Yeah, no, it's been a while since, like. And granted, I feel like whenever people see, like, you know, cinema's back, I feel like it always kind of depends on what people mean by cinema. This is one of those examples of, like, yes, you're, not only is it going to be, like, a pop culture zeitgeist movie, because it's Dune, it's sci-fi, and almost, we haven't had that much of sci-fi outside of, say, Star Wars in film, but this is one of those ones that's, like, this is, you know, a film that really has everything that you're looking for. In cinema, cinematography, a compelling story, beautiful characters, beautiful, like, it hits all the points it needs, right? Something that we haven't had in a long time, specifically for sci-fi, right? Like, this is what we've been asking for a long time. And we have it here within this film of Dune Part 2. And, just to let you guys know, we will be going into spoilers. By the time this comes out, it's been 2 weeks, and that's usually, for me, the minimum of, like, okay, you know, time's up. If you haven't seen it, you haven't seen it. Sorry.
Yeah. So, you know, we're just gonna be. I don't think we're gonna, like. We're not gonna, like, say what happens in every single frame of the movie, but
no.
You know, we're just going over the actual general plot and, like, what happens and stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we're gonna be talking about that right now, and as we tend to do. We tend to just give our like a minute of our thoughts on the film, and then like, towards the end we you know, give our full, you know, rating after a brief discussion about, you know, some of the stuff in the film. But yes, we'll start off with you, Joey, with your first 1 minute.
Okay. So Dune Part 2, I think, is truly a visual spectacle to behold. Just the way Denis Villeneuve, you know, handles all cinematography and the colors and all these sorts of shots we have in the movie is just, you know, breathtaking, you know, as well as just handling the plot of Dune, which, while I will say this, I wasn't really well versed in Dune's plot. It's a very, you know, interesting plot progression for Paul and his character to go through, as well as all the other characters around him. Like, seriously, it's just, I think it's sort of a interesting arc, and I'm kind of excited to see the next one, if I'm going to be honest, just to see where this all leads into. I will say the third act kind of, at least in terms of, like, battle sequence, is a bit flat, but overall, I think it is a solid movie that just really sort of blends it all together.
All right, and I'll give you my thoughts. So, without a doubt, this is probably one Denis Villeneuve's crowning moments in cinema. It is everything you've been hearing and more. It is what we've been asking for in terms of, you know, I guess we said before, sci-fi cinema. It is, at this point, would be one of the peak films in this year. It's a great starter for the year. Fantastic cinematography, the story of Paul and his relationship with the Freeman is probably one of the best examples of, you know, storytelling that we've had, even if it's been, like, shortened down to something much more simplified, considering to what Dune, the context of the Dune books have been. And thankfully, we have Denis Villeneuve again for that, by making him and his team have made such a great film that encapsulates everything that people loved about Dune itself. And I could go in more, but that, you know, that's kind of the point. But let's start off with, you know, the cinematography. When I remember Denis Villeneuve, I don't know where he said this, but he said he would have loved to do the movie without dialogue. He's very much visuals. And if it wasn't apparent in one of his previous films, specifically the one I'm thinking about is Arrival, where, you know, the movie where, what's her name?
Amy Adams
had to decipher
alien language
through images. I'm like, yeah, no, that makes sense. Even this film, it's told a lot through imagery. But, like, there's still like, very important dialogue, yes. But, like, the imagery just helps emphasize on what's going on and a lot of this stuff. And I don't know how you feel about those kind of words, but I think we're both in agreement that he is right to an extent in that sense.
Yeah, I definitely get the point of view of what he's going with. And, yeah, like, film is a visual language, you know, like, you get a lot of stuff when you come at it, and sort of just, like, in terms of framing and, you know, like, all this stuff. And I think you sort of see that in the film, you know, there's a lot of moments that sort of just, like, you could put this on your wall, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's definitely a lot of shots where you can just be like, okay, you can put that on a wall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's, you know, that's just the sort of the artiste coming out, you know, of, like, just framing and, like, sort of, like, where certain things are to be, you know. Like, it definitely all works to service the story. And, you know, it's a very interesting sort of, it's perspective that, Villeneuve has.
Yeah, Villeneuve. Yeah. I know why you want to say that the way that he said it.
It's French, right? He's French Canadian.
French Canadian.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And just like.
But like one of the things that I really like, that really emphasizes what he's talking about, and it really captures in the cinematography. There's one shot specifically. Actually, two, the ones I'm thinking about, and this is why I'm saying we can go into spoilers, is when Paul just arrives in the Freeman camp, and then, like, everyone's just surrounding him, and it pans out to you see, like everyone's, like, moving like a wave of an ocean as he's walking down, sort of like this prophesized, you know, character. He is, like, they treat him like a prophesized character, and we'll get to that, but, like, the sort of, like, image of him, like, you know, moving against the current. And then there's also the image of him, like, towards the end, commanding this, you know, army of people who are devoted to him. I think those are, like, one of the moments where, like, I think Denis, I don't know, is really, you know, finds importance in the imagery. But yeah, no, it's what's something you wanna talk about in terms of the film? Because we could not stop talking when we got out watching it.
I mean, I think the progression of Paul's character, I think, is definitely, like, the big one. I think that sort of comes through.
Yeah.
Because, obviously, the whole plot of Dune is that Paul has these sort of, like, psychic visions and stuff, where he sees himself becoming this sort of leader of the Fremen, you know, the people that live on Dune, you know, Arrakis.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And straight up, it's, you know, he's very much like, I don't know how I feel about this, you know, he's kind of sort of like, he's a character that, like, sort of knows what his fate will become, and he's actively fighting against it to an extent, but at the same time, it's also, like, one of those things of, like, well, you know, Paul, you know, his family, his father, you know, were all killed by the Harkins, right?
Yeah,
the
Harkonnens.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, they're obviously, and the Fremen want to get them off their planet, and, you know, Paul is very much like, yeah, I will support the Fremen, because, you know, they should have, you know, free right of their land, but at the same time, I also want revenge. you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like it plays hand in hand, and then, you know, he has these sort of things where he essentially, yeah, it's like you said earlier, like he becomes sort of a prophetic figure in their, like, religion.
Yeah.
And he fears the, like, well, you know, if I do take up that mantle, it's going to cause, like, you know, essentially, like, a huge, massive war. People will die from in my name, and it's just, like, I don't want any of that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's, like...
I made the joke while we were watching it that this is... Well, not... There's one joke I made, but the comparison I immensely made it to was, you know, another very well-known film, The Last Temptation of Christ. Because in that film, it was essentially centered around, you know, Christ having a conflicting, you know, thing about himself.
Right.
Yeah. And so I felt that coming through. And one of the things that, you know, I kind of made the joke is that Paul does not want to be a white savior.
I mean, yeah. I mean, to be fair, that's also an interesting theme
yeah.
when it comes to, I guess, even the original Dune books of, like, yeah, you know, you have Paul, you know, as a character leading a group of, I will say, Arab-coded
yeah.
Characters.
Yeah.
I mean, like, a lot of... I mean, what, the name of their prophet is, like, some sort of, like, Al-Musayyin or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
The Muhadib, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you're looking for the names. I'm gonna see that.
Yeah, I know, because it's kind of a...
Well, and granted, for my, because I did a little research, the writer for Dune did, you know, base it solely, the Freeman off that, so that's kind of the vibe that they're going with, you know?
Yeah, the Lisan al-Ahib.
Yeah, so that's kind of like the idea, that they're meant to be. So those of you who are, like, finding these kind of, you know, connections, that was intended.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, even then, it kind of... It's like a weird parallel to real world history, in terms of World War One. You have Lawrence of Arabia, that whole story that
mm-hmm.
happens. British officer who helps sort of coordinate the Arab uprising against the Ottomans during World War One.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of a similar thing here when you look at that historical sort of parallel, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like unlike how Lawrence didn't have that weird Messiah prophecy that he was gifted upon. He was just sort of like, hey, the Arabs should rule their own lands, and then England and France are like, nah. but anyways, yeah, it is an interesting character conflict for Paul, and like you said, it kind of even, like, takes a bit of a jab at the white savior thing, where it's like, okay, this is a character that by all intents and purposes, he's probably a white savior who doesn't want to be a white savior.
But part of this was, and I've had conversations with others about the film, it's almost this commentary on, this might, you know, upset some people, but, you know, I think something that we all agree on. It's this taking of someone's, you know, whether it be culture, belief, or you know, whatever, and assimilating it as a, what's the word I'm looking for?
I think you're going for cultural appropriation, is that?
Kind of. It's more of like, we're using your beliefs to forward our gain. The idea of co-opting other people's...
Right, yeah, I think, yeah, which is also a sort of a historical thing that comes with a lot of colonial stuff.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of examples off the top of my head, but, I mean, it has happened quite a bit, you know, where...
Because there's times where I was like, man, Paul's mom feels like more of the villain than anyone else here, too.
Yeah, because she is part of the Bene Gesserit,
yeah.
right? And her whole thing is she becomes like a new Reverend Mother
yeah.
for the Furman religion, and her whole bit is to straight up just...
Her and her daughter.
Yeah, you know, the baby inside her.
Yeah.
Straight up, like, you know, have this whole plan of, like, making Paul even more of that Messiah figure by spreading, you know, all the things about him
mm-hmm.
to the masses. And, like, he heads south to where all, like, the most devout Furman are
mm-hmm.
to the religion. And, you know, it's just, like, yeah, it is very much like a, you know, we will manipulate these people through their religion
mm-hmm.
in order to have them see Paul as their one true savior, you know.
Yeah, in all of a sense to combat the Emperor and the Harkins and all the people that, you know, destroyed their family.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's some juicy shit.
Yeah, you know, it's all for the purpose of getting revenge and, you know, that stuff, but at the same time, it's like, dang, this is going, like, at a certain point, you're like, yeah, no, like you said, you can argue that Paul's mother could be very well be, like, a secondary villain in a way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, even at the end of the movie, she's like, the Holy War has begun, you know?
Yeah, it's something that they've been planning on, and I'm not condoning her shit, it's like, she saw visions of this, and then she's like, this is the only way we can survive, and Paul, very much this person who does not want anything to do with this, he has lived with these people, he has, you know, he loves these people, he's in love with Zendaya's character, whose name I cannot pronounce, is it Chitney?
Oh, yeah,
we've had
Zendaya's character.
Yeah, Zendaya's character, who is not a believer.
Yeah, like, it's very, you know, there's a lot more people in the north of Arrakis that are, like, not as devout as, you know, say, some of the other characters, like Javier Bardem's character, you know?
Yeah, he's very much devoted of the faith.
Stilgar, yeah.
Yeah, and he uses it to help Paul and his mother to survive. Mostly because, for him, he's like, he could be the one.
Yeah.
And it's at the same time, it doesn't, like, talk bad about religion. At the same time, I'll say that, because there was a moment where, I think it was one of the best moments, is when Paul's mother is brought to the pool of tears. I forget what this is called, but it's like, and she asks, you know, she finds out, like, oh yes, this is the water from those that have passed, and it's sort of like this beautiful spiritual moment, because it's something that Paul's mother understands, right? She's very much like, she's been a Jesuit. She understands, like, you know, all this, you know, religion and, you know,
yeah,
the beauty in it. And then when she, you know, sheds a tear, that, in, you know, Javier Bardem's like, no, that's why we don't cry, because, you know, that's very important to us. It's like, beautiful, understandable. And she could let it go opposite because of, you know, what she's able to see and, you know, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's one of the main themes of the movie. And it's very interesting to see that. But yeah, no, Paul's character is essentially that he doesn't want any of this to happen, and he doesn't want to involve himself with this, but, you know, call it fate, call it, you know, destiny, whatever you want it to be, you know, he has no choice. And I think that's probably one of the things I really enjoyed about the movie, is that Paul is this very much, till the end, a reluctant hero.
And yeah.
I was very intrigued by all that.
Yeah, no, it is a very, like, interesting character arc for him, because, yeah, by the end, he is more or less, because he drinks, like, the water life thing,
yeah,
with, like, some, like, liquid inside the sandworms.
Yeah, specifically the kids, the baby ones.
Yeah, so, you know, he has this sort of, essentially gives him better, like, control of those psychic powers, and, like, he can actually see into the future, basically, at this point. And yeah, he sort of takes up that mantle, he rallies all the Furman, you know, they, pretty much do a whole bit, with the Emperor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they get him to come to Arrakis and, you know, they all attack, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Can I just say, it was such a whiplash to see, Christopher Walken as the Emperor.
Yeah, I guess it's like, because when you think of Christopher Walken, you know, it's like, you think of him in all his comedic roles, right? You know, it's like,
yeah, I know he's been in serious movies, but I just sometimes can't help but think about him going, like, whatever he said in Annie Hall, I can't remember.
Really? Because all I think about nowadays is just, like, I have a fever, and the only prescription is more cowbell.
Exactly.
You know? Just like that.
And he's more cowbell.
That in when he was the mafia boss dad in Kangaroo Jack, remember that?
Shit.
Yeah.
Fuck, they hit me back with, like, in the back,
yeah,
of the head.
I think that's probably the first time I remember seeing Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
Just in that movie.
Him and what's his name? The Zod.
Oh, Michael.
Yeah, Michael Shannon was in that movie.
Oh, yeah, he was. He was one of the bodyguards, wasn't he?
No, he was like the brother-in-law or something.
Oh, yeah.
It's all coming back to me. This is the beauty of Dune.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, no, it's yeah, he's in it and he does a good job. But the Skarsgård, what's his name? The Baron Harkonnen?
His nephew?
Yeah, him. He was really good. But the sad part is, for me, I felt like he wasn't in there for long.
Yeah, Stellan Skarsgård?
Yeah.
Dang, like, all those...
Oh, not the Skarsgård. The one who played the nephew. He played Elvis, but I can't remember his name.
Oh, okay. I think I remember who you're talking about.
The names are very
good. Austin Butler?
Yes, Austin Butler. He was very good. My only thing was that he wasn't in there for very long. But yes, no, that whole scene with the planet was probably my favorite moment of the film. Just because, like, it's... A lot of people was like... There's a lot of people wondering why is it light lit this way. But, like, no, that's how the planet looks. That's why they're all so pale.
Yeah, that was probably, like, one of the most visually striking parts of the movie. Because, you know, it's all more or less black and white. Because their whole system is, like, has, like, a white star, I'm guessing? Mm-hmm. Producing, like, white light and everything sort of contrasts. Mm-hmm. Like, their fireworks aren't even, like, that's just, like, exploding plasma, it looks like.
Yeah, like, exploding black dust.
Yeah, something like that. And it's just, like, it's such an interesting, unique thing, right? Where, you know, it's, like, I think, and that's probably credit to, you know, Dune sort of world building, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you have, like, a planet like this and, you know, oh, this is how they're able to do stuff like this.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that whole sequence on that, you know, on the Harkovens' home planet, you know, is just so, you know, captivating.
Yeah, the moment where, like, those, like, people dressed in blacks came out of nowhere, I was like, what the fuck? Oh, they were hit. Oh, damn, I didn't even see them coming out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of the point.
And they're blending into the shadows,
yeah. Yeah, but, like, yeah, no, those guys were great. My only thing was, like, dang, there wasn't enough of Austin Butler or Dave Bautista for me to really latch on to those characters, really. Granted, I think the main villain for that one was supposed to be the Baron, their uncle,
mm-hmm.
who was very much, you know, Skarsgård was fantastic in that movie, in this movie, and in the previous one, because he was the big threat. And, yeah, no, the everyone in there was bringing in their A-game with this. You mentioned that the only issue you had was the climax, right?
Yeah, I think I remember that was my only, like, my only criticism I probably had, just because it just feels a little, kind of rushed,
mm-hmm.
Because, I don't know, like, it always felt like, to me, like, it was gonna be not, like, a huge, bombastic, like, final battle kind of thing, but there's, like, some sort of, tension going in there, because... you know, Paul and his forces sort of take, you know, control of the area pretty fast. Like, I mean, it is a surprise attack, but, like, it just feels like there should have been a lot more struggles and maybe some, like, characters in, like, a lot more dangerous situations. Like, I felt like, and again, not knowing Dune or, like, the source material, I thought, like, Stilgar was gonna die somehow, you know? Like, I felt like that was gonna be a big moment or whatever, or, like, you know, like, they sort of just bust into that throne room pretty fast,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I don't know, maybe it's kind of, like, not the point.
Yeah.
Not to have these sort of huge battles, but it's all more of, like, the politics,
mm-hmm.
you know, of the, of this universe, as well as, the more smaller scale interactions with characters,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, I understand. It just felt kind of weirdly... paced there, but I mean, I think it still was fine. It's just, I was very, all right, okay, cool, that's interesting.
Yeah, no, they very much wanted to focus on, like, Austin Butler and, Timothée Chalamet's final battle in that one. Well, not final battle, but, you know, final confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
Which, even for me, some of that choreography was fantastic, and just the last bit was like, wait, where did that other knife come from? But yeah, no, I agree. Like, it's just there wasn't much tension in that aspect, for the climax. But like I said, I'm still, you know, I was still in the ride. I was enjoying myself from beginning to end. So I'm not really a negative, and more like a small nitpick, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
For you, I don't know if that's the same for you, but yeah.
What do you mean?
Would you consider that really a negative or more of a nitpick?
I mean, I guess for me, I would kind of consider it, like, I don't know, because I feel like when it comes to nitpicks, for me, it's mostly stuff that, like, just annoys me.
Yeah.
That I don't really care about. Here, I feel like I'm leaning towards more criticism, because it is sort of like, he just feels a bit stilted, you know, that whole last bit there. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's just my opinion. Like, you know, I obviously,
mm-hmm.
it's like I said earlier, you know, like, probably maybe that's not the point.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in my brain, I'm like, okay, well, I still feel like, you know.
There need to be something more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand that. It's you're not really, like, you're not, you know, being negative. It's more like, I feel like something's, you know, like you're missing something. And like you said, you're missing something in there.
Mm.
Like it shouldn't have been as fast. Maybe prolong it for another, like, 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I granted this movie is like almost 3 hours anyway.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, did not feel like that. You know?
Did not feel like that at all.
No.
There were times where I'm like, oh okay. This is, did not feel like 2 hours.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. So I think we're getting close to the end of, like, what are we going to talk about? What are your final thoughts and your, you know, rating for this movie?
Final thoughts probably be more sort of like, it's a good movie. I really, really, really was fascinated by it, enthralled by the characters, you know, the visuals, and just you really feel teleported into the world of Dune. You know, it's like, as someone who's never really cared that much about Dune other than, ha, space worms, spicy melange, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like, knowing those pop culture bits.
We get a lot of those in the movie.
Yeah, the spice melange. Get back, Tom Brady.
Get back, Tom Brady.
You know, overall, it was a fantastic film, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I really do think it stands next to the first one, you know, like, they're both really good films, and like I said earlier, I'm really excited to see sort of the next one, you know, like, how this all sort of wraps up, you know?
My thing is, how weird are we going to get with Dune? Because I've known people that explain to me some of the weird things that happens in Dune, and I'm just like, dude, that sounds so fucking weird. I don't think they're going to do any of that. It's like, no, we don't think they're going to do any of that. Yeah, because there's no way you can interpret that. Like, someone explained to me the dog-shaped chairs. And I'm just like, what? Yeah. They genetically altered some dogs to be chair-shaped. Which I'm like, that's weird. That's weird. I kind of want to see something weird like that. But they're not going to do that weird. They might do some other weird shit, but not that weird.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or even, like, and granted, some of the stuff, like I was talking about before, it's very streamlined, because they never talk about or insinuate the fact that people here are genetically, there's a lot of eugenics going on in Dune, apparently, where there's a reason why they don't use computers, well, AI computers, because Great War, but, you know, we use genetics to make people very smart enough where they don't need a computer.
Mm-hmm.
Hence that one dude in that last movie who, like, rolled his eyes. I was like, yes, and da 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 da.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I am 100% with you, and I do believe that this is a fantastic movie. Fantastic movie where there's a lot of great cinematography, a very compelling story with Paul, who started off in the first movie as very reserved, kind of scared of what the future holds, and then in here, finding his place with the Freeman, and reluctantly becoming their savior is, you know, a great, fantastic story, and I'm very excited to see where they go. Will they go weird? I don't know. I kind of do want to hope to see that. But, you know, time will tell. We're only going to get three. We're going to get a third movie based on the second book, and we'll see how far they go with that. But, yes, no, I 100% agree. I'm very excited to see what comes next with Denis Villeneuve's Dune. So your rating would be?
I would probably go for a 9 out of 10.
I don't know. I'm with you there. 9 out of 10. This is a if not a perfect movie, an almost perfect movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, yeah, guys, let us know what you think of Dune. If you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to follow us on all social medias, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We're most epic on Instagram, and on there you'll find a link to all podcast sites. We're officially part of, like, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and all the like. And you'll find a link to the YouTube where you can like, comment, subscribe, all the like, and Patreon for our support. And, yeah, guys, go out and enjoy Dune. Get yourself a taste of that spice melange. The spice melange.
Yeah.
Anyways, guys, give me that boy, Eli.
Me, Joe.
Guys, have a good one. Peace.